Our next speaker is Klaus Thurgestrom. Klaus is going to be talking about progress in the implementation of a system for deep geological disposal of spent nuclear fuel in Sweden, looking at both technical and social aspects. Klaus is president of SKB, which is the acronym that essentially represents the Swedish Nuclear Fuel and Waste Management Company. And what's really interesting about the way that organization was formulated is that it's a basically a public-private corporation that's made up of all the Swedish nuclear utilities, and it's a joint company that deals with all matters related to spent fuel and nuclear waste management, including research, technical development, and industrial implementation. And I know that that particular organization is the subject of considerable envy here in the United States because, you know, under the wouldn't it be nice if we had an organization like that to deal with our circumstances. Klaus has worked with matters related to nuclear energy and environmental protection since the mid-1970s, both in Sweden and abroad. He coordinated parts of the KBS safety study in the 1980s. He spent time with OECD, more particularly the Nuclear Energy Agency, and he's a member of CNE, the French National Scientific Evaluation Committee for Nuclear Waste Management. Might also add on a personal note, as a member of the Nuclear Waste Technical Review Board, we have sent delegations over to Sweden for fact-finding purposes, and Klaus and his organization have been most gracious hosts on every trip that we've made there, and I want to personally thank him for that. Klaus?
You want to use that, or you want a mic that you can walk around with?
Maybe I'll walk around. I'll keep that in.
We've got one for the podcast, and okay. One so you can walk around.
Yeah.
I'll go ahead and turn that off. There you go. There's a chance.
Okay.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you. And I would like to start by thanking the sponsors and the organizers for inviting me to this seminar, which is very interesting for a foreigner to get a more detailed picture of what's happening in your big country. And in particular, of course, for the opportunity to meet again with Frank Parker. I've been taken care of with very great hospitality during these days in Nashville, so it's been a great trip for me to come here. The first slide, please. This is my country, Sweden. When coming here, speaking to taxi drivers and so on, they quite often ask, where do you come from? And I say, Sweden. And one out of three just get a blank face, and then they say, is it far from here? Yes, I said, it's quite far. We have 10 operating reactor units in Sweden. I think I should remind you about the nuclear context in Sweden, at three different sites. And we have one site, the one in the south, where the reactors have been phased out from the program. Actually, we had in the 1980s a referendum about the nuclear energy future in our country. And the political outcome of that referendum was a decision to phase out nuclear by the year 2010. It's 3 years from now. That will not happen. That decision has become obsolete. What's happened politically is that this reactor has been closed. It's closed to Denmark and to Copenhagen. But the other three reactor sites, in total 10 reactors, these reactors have been upgraded or are being upgraded with more capacity than corresponding to what was phased out. And the life of these reactors have been extended up to 50 or 60 years of operation. So Sweden has about 50% of its electricity from nuclear. The other part is from hydro. So it's very good in terms of climate change impact. And for the moment, we are planning in total to taking care of 12,000 tons of spent fuel in the nuclear waste program in Sweden. And as was mentioned in the introduction, the SKB has been jointly formed already in the end of the 1970s to do what is required by the law, that the utilities has to do everything necessary for the safe management and final disposal of nuclear waste and spent fuel. It's a very clear paragraph in the law. The utilities have to make the funding, to do the research, to do the technical development, to operate the necessary facilities, and to close them. Only once everything has been done in the far future, most probably, the utilities has fulfilled the requirements of the law. Already in the beginning of the 1980s, it was decided then to set up a national system for management of nuclear waste and spent fuel. And it looks like this. The main producers, so to say, the utilities don't like when I say they produce nuclear waste. They produce also electricity, so I should remind you of that. But as a byproduct, as we know, spent fuel and operational waste. And then we get some waste from medical care, industry, and research. All that basically is taken care of in a system where transportation is made by a ship. All our nuclear sites are on the coast. So we have a ship in operation, the Siegen ship, since 1982. It's about time now to start to think about a new ship, actually. After 25 years of operation of a normal ship, they are normally considered to be out of date and should be replaced. Siegen is a little bit particular because we've taken care of her very much, and maybe she can operate for another 10 or 15 years. But we are looking at a new ship. An interim storage facility for all the spent fuel. The spent fuel stay about 1 year at the nuclear reactors. Then comes the boat and get it to CLAB facility at one of the reactor sites. So all the spent fuel basically is collected at this centralized storage facility. It's classical pool storage, but it's underground with about 30 meters of rock cover for the storage. I got a question yesterday at the party why we don't use dry storage, and I think the main reason is that at that time dry storage was not mature when this was decided. This was a decision by 1980. But we are very happy with the facility. We can collect it in a good way and we can have extended storage if we want. So it gives us the freedom in time to develop the necessary system for final disposal. And then we have a final repository in the bedrock at another reactor site, Forsmark, for the low-level waste. Underground caverns actually in the bedrock under the Baltic Sea. And this facility is in operation since 1988, this one since 1985. Actually, at this time, we have some discussion and problem with the authorities about documentation and the verification of the long-term safety assessment of the SFR. So for the moment, we are not sending any waste there, but we expect to continue within a few months when we've given them the necessary documentation. So what I will basically speak about now is what will happen with the spent fuel after interim storage at CLAB. Next, please. Well, just a few words about CLAB. There are two ships of porous storage pools. These are the surface facilities, and we bring a lot of visitors to the facility from the municipalities. This happened to be the leader of the biggest party in Sweden. So we try to bring also political decision makers very frequently to the facilities and as close as possible to the spent fuel. The capacity of this now, once it's been extended, is necessary or enough for the time up to 2030 approximately. So it should give capacity enough for the time needed to implement the deep disposal concept. Next, please. This is the KBS concept. It was conceived in the end of the 1970s. Based on very simple principles. It's a classical multiple barrier principle with a canister, long-term lifetime, a canister with a copper and an insert at this time now of cast iron to be put at about 500 meters depth in Swedish crystalline bedrock and the canister should be surrounded by bentonite clay. This concept was first reviewed end of 70s and beginning in the 1980s. And actually, it was agreed by the Swedish government and safety authorities that the concept was enough for starting the last reactors in the Swedish program. And that review process involved also extensive review by National Academy of Sciences, which had a great importance in that decision. So it got a good starting point. It got a verification at that time with the safety assessment details that could be provided at that time. It would not pass in the same way today, of course. Things are evolving, as we have been saying. Now, this was about 25, 30 years ago, thought out on paper. What has happened since then? We have 25 years of research, development, and demonstration work now, so we are ready within 1 or 2 years from now to give a license application for industrial implementation of this concept. So we are actually approaching the time when we want to go to the authorities and say, look, we think we have enough to do this in reality on an industrial scale. And what do we need to be able to do that? Next, please. We need three things. We need, of course, to show that we have the technology, the knowledge to do this, and have the scientific basis to assess the long-term safety. We need a site, a location, and we need the confidence of the stakeholders. And in the rest of my talk, I will illustrate where we are today on technology, on location, siting, and on the confidence matter. Next, please. There is a certain process that was set up already in the beginning of the 1980s, saying that the SKB has to, every 3 years, to give a description of the results of the program and a plan for the future. And that is reviewed by universities, by the safety authorities, and so on. And through this three-year process, we have had a continuity in the program that has been very helpful for the development. And after each report, the government has taken a decision saying basically, you are on the right direction, we want you to give some more information on this matter, and so on and so forth. Concerned municipalities, stakeholders, environmental groups have had the possibility to say their words about what they think about the program. So there is a track record on the development history of the system. And during this full process, we have now reached the stage where we have demonstration facilities, inactive, full-scale demonstration facilities for all the key components of this multiple barrier system. Next, please. We have, for the canister, a canister laboratory where we can show that we can handle canisters of these sizes, that we can weld them together on an industrial production capacity level. We have a full-scale bentonite laboratory where we can manage the bentonite components and test their properties. And we have the ESPE hard rock laboratory, which is an underground full-scale laboratory in crystalline rock to demonstrate and to develop the scientific basis of the disposal technology. And the canister laboratory is in operation since 1997, ESPE since 1994, and the bentonite laboratory, we extended ESPE with that just 2 years ago. Next, please. So for the canisters, for instance, these are some pictures from the canister laboratory. We have fabricated, with the help of industry, canisters of these sizes, the inserts, the cast iron insert. These canisters has two things to do in the repository. It should protect from corrosion, and it has to withstand the mechanical impact at depth. And to take an example, the mechanical impact, it has to withstand the swelling pressure from the bentonite, that's 5 to 10 megapascals. It has to withstand the pressure from 500 meters of water, in the bedrock, and during a glaciation, it has to withstand about 3 kilometers of ice. Adding up all that, it's about 30 megapascal in total that it has to withstand. So we tested these canisters. We made modeling of the mechanical integrity, and the testing showed that they will break after about 100 megapascal. So it's possible, and it's been verified that we can fulfill the requirements on the mechanical thing. This is the friction stir welding machine. We developed together with Welding Institute in England, adopted a welding technology which is called friction stir welding to copper canisters, where you don't melt the copper, you just stir around with a certain tool so it becomes soft, as when you make a cake, and then it goes around and you can get a very nice weld. Next, please. Well, that's just a picture of the Espy Hard Rock Laboratory. It's in operation, as I said, since the mid-90s. There we have full-scale demonstration program on retrieval experiments, for instance. That we have a tunnel with a demo disposal tunnel with full-scale canisters, 6 of them, backfilled as it should be, and that will be opened gradually during the next decades as a verification of what we are doing. It's about 50 experiments going on in this facility. It goes down to 500 meters depth approximately, and there are 6 or 7 different countries cooperating in these different experiments. It's also a major facility for visits and for communication and explanation on what we are doing. So we are saying today we are ready with the technology. We think we can go to the next phase, active and industrial scale. Next, please. What about the siting, the most difficult one? Actually, we have one phase of failure, at least the public opinion failure, and then so far we have a success story. The first, the failure phase you have here, we made drillings between 77 and 85 on all these places all over Sweden as a program basically run with a mindset of geoscience and accessibility to the land where you were drilling. And we got a marvelous scientific basis for what is deep crystalline bedrock in Sweden. So it was a very useful program. But almost at all these sites, the different municipalities explicitly said, we don't want to have the repository. And in 1985, it came into a dead end when we tried to make some drillings close to Stockholm. And it was on the main news. And the minister, the day after, said, please stop. I don't want to see the police, the young women with the children in the television. This is not a good siting program. What happened then? Well, there was 5 years of a moratorium, where we instead made the Espy Hard Rock Laboratory. And then, in the beginning of the 1990s, actually, I happened to come back from Paris, and I was put in charge of a new siting program, where we put up 2 basic principles for success. Of course, we had to show that we have a safe site. And then we said we will base it on voluntary participation by the different municipalities. Because only then can you have a constructive dialogue and participation by the public, by the responsible elected people, and so on and so forth. So we started by doing some theoretical studies on what parts of Swedish bedrock could be feasible. And the conclusion of that you can see on this map. The green parts, basically, by the geoscientific people, were considered to have a potential to fulfill the geoscientific requirements. And you can see all over Sweden, almost, there are a potential in most of the municipalities. Not in the mountain range to Norway, not in the very south, not on the island of Gotland, but in many other parts, there is a possibility. And that was a basis, of course, of saying that we want to work with voluntary participation from municipalities. Had this map showed that we can only be in a few places. We would have needed to go to those places. Then we started what we called feasibility studies at municipalities who volunteered to participate. And they volunteered by voting in the municipality council that they wanted to participate in a feasibility study. There was no commitment to have a repository. It was only a commitment to study together with us what are the implications and the possibilities for a repository in our municipality. And two of them were in the north, and the rest were located around where we already have nuclear reactors or research centers, Nyköping, Forsmark, and Oskarshamn, and neighboring communities. The two first ones were in the north, and there we learned, that was the learning ground of dialogue and public communication for me and for my organization, I would say. We spent 4 or 5 years in total in both these municipalities after the feasibility study. The pressure on the local politicians was such that they had to have local referendum should they continue or not. And in both cases, the result was a no. First, in Storuman, 70% of the people voted no. We don't want any continuation with site studies, site investigations, physical drillings. These involved no drillings, the feasibility studies. And the same for Malå, 52% against. So that was a failure, but it was the major point in the learning process for siting. And it was also a very important point for the credibility of the voluntary process. Because what happened was that we did what we had promised. If they don't want to continue, we will leave. So the week after the referendum, we closed the local office and we left the municipality. And that created the credibility for the next phase with the municipalities in the south. I think that's very important. We've spoken about the process and the credibility of the actions and the authenticity of the actors. And I think it's Voltaire who has said that what you do is much more important. So he said, "Your acts speak so loudly, so I cannot hear what you are saying," and that means that you communicate mainly with what you are actually doing. Okay, to make a long story short, we continued in the south, and there was a continuous interest to go on, and we selected actually three municipalities. One of them backed off, and two were left for site investigations. And since 2002, we are doing drillings and have finished drillings at these two sites. Both are in nuclear municipalities, with reactors at Forsmark and at Oskarshamn. And we have finished the physical work on site, and we have 1 year more to go to do the long-term safety assessment. It's already on the way, and the environmental impact assessment. And then we'll finish by selecting one of the sites and giving the license application. Next, please. Well, just some pictures from these site investigations. It's a large scientific effort, of course, with very high requirements on quality assurance, traceability of all the data, and it's a major effort now within the next 1 to 2 years to put all that data together for both sites. Next, please. And here are some happy geologists who have found a very good solid bedrock. I think it's at Forsmark, that one. We have about 15 deep drill holes, for instance, to 1,000 meters at these two sites, as one source for information, but a lot of geophysics and all that stuff that you know very well. Okay, next one. Now, the final point, that was the technology and the site. What about the public confidence? I spoke about first phase and second phase. We're back to that. In the first phase, if you remember, up to 1985, this could be the situation. And this is a very particular group because it's at a site where we never did any studies. It was just put in the map in the end of the 70s. It was a very sensitive area from an environmental point of view. The local population formed a group, put up a cottage, and they guarded the site up from 78 until a couple of years ago. 24 hours per day, all over those years. They are in the Guinness Book of Records. During 10 years, I got a letter 1 week before Christmas every year where they said, please formally promise that there will be no studies made in our place. We sent the letter back saying we have no plans, there are no planning, no hidden schedule, we will not include you in this, but formal statements what will happen in the future, we cannot do that. That's not possible. Finally, they got a letter from the Minister of Environment, and they closed the guarding of the site, I think, 3 years ago. I was actually invited to the goodbye party, so we had good relations. And, I got coffee and a sandwich and so on, and a lot of rather old gentlemen at that time were very, very happy. This is a picture more like we have been working the last 10 years. And it has been a really major part of the program to do this interaction with the public and the local elected people and so on and so forth. It means thousands of meetings, small meetings. It really means being part of the local community and the regional community. For instance, in some of these feasibility study municipalities, we have brought up to 30-40% of the population down to the facilities where we have the spent fuel and the hard rock laboratory by buses going every week and so on and so forth. And the best thing is to be invited to their homes and to sit and speak in the evenings with the population of different kinds. Yes, please. So now in the two municipalities, this is the situation. The decision to go for site investigations was taken by almost unanimous municipality councils in both municipalities. I think in Oskarshamn it was 50 votes against one in the council, and in Östhammar Forsmark it was 49 against 5 or something like that. And if we ask the population, what do you think about the repository in your own municipality? We have over 2003 up to 2007 a positive trend in both, and now we are at 83% in Oskarshamn and 77 in Forsmark. Of course, one of the reasons is also that they have, previous to our efforts, they have a nuclear experience since the end of 70s, which is, of course, very good. Okay, finally, this is then the plan. To implement this on an industrial scale, we need two facilities. We need the encapsulation facility, where we'll take the spent fuel from the CLAB facility and put it into these canisters. We have already applied for a license to construct the encapsulation plant adjacent to the existing CLAB facility. So that is now already being processed by the safety authorities. In 2009, we will give a license application for the deep repository after having selected one of these two sites. And then there will be a coordinated licensing, one coordinated decision for both facilities, and both according to Nuclear Activities Act and to the Environmental Protection Code. This will be a very complex process, and I'm sure there will be questions, maybe even need to add to the license documentation and so on and so forth. But there is a fair chance that we will succeed more or less in this time schedule, and then we would have a repository in operation around 2020. And to finish, I would say that, of course, there's a similar process in Finland. Finland early on adopted the Swedish concept, KBS concept, and we worked together closely in developing that concept since many years. Thank you very much.